As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, everybody working up. Everybody's working.
With that, time's yours.
For the number of times that we have talked on this show about how the Chiefs only play weird games, I think we might need to retire that phrase or maybe just put it on ice temporarily because the entire NFL only plays weird games now. And I think there might be an argument that the Chiefs actually played one of the most normal games of this week of NFL action, which might be more of a reflection on what they have been and then have ceased to be and then were again on Sunday Night Football. But it certainly means that we have plenty to talk about here on this edition of Time's Ours. I'm Joshua Briscoe with Nate Taylor and Seth Kaiser. And this episode of Time's Ours is presented by BetMGM, the exclusive betting partner of The Athletic. Sign up at BetMGM.com using the promo code THEATHLETICPOD. Also brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. Nate, you went to Vegas. You made it back to Vegas from Vegas. For some reason, you stopped in Minnesota shortly. It had nothing to do with Seth. You guys were in the same state after the Chiefs played at the Raiders. You can try to explain that to me if you wish. I'm mostly just curious how your brief time in Vegas went.
It went fine. It was enjoyable. I am mature enough to follow my core principles, which is as much as you would like for me to gamble, I'm not going to do it. As much as there are other entertainment possibilities, I'm just going to do my normal business and handle it. It was a really fun atmosphere. And clearly there were a lot of Chiefs fans there. I think the first good sign on Sunday night, and Tyrann Mathieu alluded to this, was the idea that the Raiders built this new Death Star in the desert. It attracts all sorts of people. And yet, in the first true renewing of the rivalry between the Chiefs and the Raiders in this new location, obviously because of the pandemic last year, that, boy, was everybody pumped to say home of the Chiefs. I don't know if they showed that on the broadcast for Sunday Night Football, but it was loud and people were like geeked to do it. And look, one team is sort of trending downwards and one team is trending upwards. And it appears that the Chiefs are hitting their stride at what you would hope would be the appropriate time of the year, right? Just a little ahead of Thanksgiving. And we'll see if this team can continue to improve. But ladies and gentlemen, sometimes it's just easy. The quarterback's good, everything else sort of falls into place. And that's both good for the team and sometimes it's good for the reporter, because it's just like, okay, this is Patrick Mahomes being at his absolute best. And sort of reminding people that, you know, he's still good at football. So I love the state of Minneapolis. I love Minnesota. I love Minneapolis's airport. and I'm happy to be home, Josh. I don't know why you have to try to get me on a gotcha question, but I'm
here. He's pretty divisive.
He really is. I mean, but...
Look, I'm just saying that I'm currently on Vegas.com, and the idea that you didn't see any of these seven different Cirque du Soleil shows, or David Copperfield, who at least on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that's all 7 days, folks, appears to be doing a 70-minute show three times a day. Hey, can someone check in on David Copperfield? I think... The next time he mutters, like, I wish I could disappear for real. Like, I think at that point, we're going to know that it's gotten to be too much for him.
Can I tell you...
Is he doing 20 shows a week?
Can I tell you just something that also occurred in Vegas at the same time?
I hope you better stay there, Nate. Whatever happened there, better stay there. That's what I've been promised.
No, it's okay. No, it's okay. We're you know, we're out in public with this.
Oh, we're recording. Oh,
yes, okay. Yes. So this came out weeks ago, perhaps even months ago. I think my buddy Tashawn Reed, who covers the Raiders for The Athletic, you should always check out his coverage, obviously, if you're a Chiefs fan, of what is going on with the Raiders, which, by the way, quite a lot. So this came out months ago, and it just so happened to coincide on the same weekend that Chiefs Raiders, at least part one for the 2021 season, started. There was a monumental concert festival series on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And so I believe Kendrick Lamar performed for the first time live on Friday.
Oh, wow.
I fly down Saturday, and it was supposed to be Travis Scott, but if you've read the news,
ooh, yeah,
he in some things.
Yeah, he's going to probably be a minute.
And so I think they brought in Post Malone, and I was like, I'm going to just chill.
You stayed in your hotel room instead of going to see Post Malone? Nate, yeah. you have pierced my heart.
I'm sorry. And ladies and gentlemen, we found the generational gap between us.
Right where it is. It is right at Post Malone. That is the exact divide.
And so I'm going to name him.
Go ahead. So Karl Malone changed his name and became a performer of some sort?
Well,
it's a stage
name. And the other generation
has
entered the chat.
Yeah,
he actually goes by Post Up Malone.
Yeah, he got a lot of new tattoos in a short amount of time. So I'm going to mention three artists really quick, and I highly recommend these artists to people. If they have not heard them, they should check them out. But it kind of hurt my soul to know that, like, I have a job to do. I need to provide insight and information about the team that people beloved, which is obviously the Kansas City Chiefs, for The Athletic. And thank you, people, for subscribing. But I missed Looney, who is a Toronto-based R&B singer. She has a great voice. I miss Saba, who is a Chicago hip-hop artist. Quite honestly, my favorite young guy in the game right now. Mm. Saba's amazing. And I think he's coming out with a new album relatively soon. And fellas, as Patrick Mahomes was throwing touchdowns 3, 4, and 5, I was Missy Snow Allegra. And that is just R&B cocaine, okay? If people have not heard of Snow Allegra, she's wonderful. There's a Tiny Desk. Go look it up. It's great. But all of that is to say is that the world is sort of getting back to normal. Like, I was looking at the videos of these artists perform, most notably on Instagram, and there were large crowds, just like in the new Death Star at the desert of Las Vegas. And I wasn't, like, startled. Much mm-hmm. in the same way of, like, Patrick Mahomes throwing deep and me expecting it to be complete. Because, if anything, of course, as we sort of alluded to last week, the Raiders were a get-right team. And boy, did Patrick Mahomes get right. Just like, hey, it's nice to know that Kendrick Lamar can still be a great artist on stage, even though you haven't seen it in 2 years. And this is a much different, you know, circumstance and context. But the Chiefs wearing all white and just destroying the Raiders for 60 minutes. I mean, that's got to bring a tear to some people's eyes who are old enough to understand the significance of the uniform and their quarterback playing excellent in them for the first time in his career, by the way. Like, you know, the only other time they had played in all white was in that exhilarating 2018 loss to the Rams. But yeah, this is my Vegas. This is all I have to give you for Vegas. I didn't play the slots. I didn't play poker. No one arrested me. I left with all my clothing. I left with all my clothing. You know, there is no hangover here. You know, I was not a lone wolf, and I'm totally okay with that. And, fellas, it's a pleasure to do a podcast with you just a day later because, you know, sometimes planes don't arrive on time.
I just am seeing here that you could have seen Chris Angel's new special Raw, and I'd like to read you a brief synopsis here. Raw reinvents his best-selling Mind Freak routine for an intimate setting, allowing the audience to get up close and personal with Chris and his assistants in a stripped-down show which will really demonstrate his magic touch. Prepare to see America's premier illusionist, mentalist, and trickster like you've never seen him before. Tell me that's not worth $145 it would have set you back to go see it, Nate!
I'm intrigued now.
The pictures, every picture of Chris Angel is crazier than the last.
Seeing certain people on plastered on large, and I mean large hotels, like obnoxiously large, like, sir, your face is like six floors of this hotel. Like, that's just weird. But, you know, advertising, it's a wonderful thing. One other little quick story, fellas. On my way to Minneapolis, because, of course, you know, if you're trying to go back east, why don't you go north first?
Way north. Oh, like significantly north.
Why don't you go north? I got to chat with Michelle Tafoya for like a few minutes. It was a wonderful experience because she lives in the state of Minnesota.
I didn't know that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So when we landed, she got to go home, and I got to just hang.
Now, Seth, did you do any gambling or any go to any magic shows this weekend?
Yes, actually, both. I also saw a live tiger, so I got the whole Vegas experience there in my home. No, I didn't. I did get to see snow. And then it snowed some more.
Yes, it did.
Oh.
Yes, it did.
It's actually not that bad. There's barely like 2 or 3 inches on the ground at this
point. Wait, there are 2 or 3 inches of snow on the ground right now?
Ah, barely.
Oh.
Everything's already melting. Nature is healing. But that's Minnesota. It might still melt again. Hold on. Let me take a look at the forecast. We might. It's supposed to get to 35 degrees. Oh, nope. It's going to snow again tomorrow. Oh, yep, and now we're getting our first really actually cold day of the year on Sunday. It gets down to 8, and so it's here to stay.
I love fall, and I like winter, and I think that oftentimes it gets over-criticized as a season. But Seth, it shouldn't be 8 degrees on November 20th or whatever it will be. Like, that is
not
people
should
live there.
Did you not already hear my spirit break as I was like, going through this? But you know what? By the time in this time in 2 weeks, I am going to be traveling down to Minneapolis to get on a plane to head down to sunny Florida. So life is good, man. I'm not going to let this weather get me down.
I just feel like eventually you're going to leave. And you're just not going to get on the plane to go home. Like, you're just going to say, you know what? I will dig a hole on the beach and I'll just live in here.
Look,
and we'll figure it out.
If enough people subscribe to the Chief of the North newsletter, that's not out of the question one day, many moons from now. Because Jazz and I have had that conversation where she's like, you know, you could do the newsletter and like wait tables. Like, I don't need to be married to a lawyer. And in fact, she editorialized about how she feels about being married to a lawyer. We don't need to get into the very hurtful things that were said.
Nate, are you worried about their marriage? We've had a tough couple weeks of Seth talking about his home life.
All I was going to say is it doesn't matter where you grind tape as long as you just grind the tape.
If you're in a hole in a beach,
I mean, grind away.
If I'm grinding the tape in Florida, man, y'all would get... You get an article a day. I do my own little mini 5-minute podcast. It can never replace this one, of course. It would be in addition to.
Now I feel like.
I'm just saying y'all subscribe. Anyway, but no, life is good. It's going to be
fun. For $12 a year, you too can help get a frozen, cold Minnesota man out of that place that people shouldn't live.
I'm asking you to save me.
Yes. Rescue Seth.
From a life of frozen tundra. In the worst possible way, and being a child protection prosecutor, do you have any idea how depressing my job is?
Can I just tell you, if you continue down this path, have we introduced to you the idea of Florida?
I just feel like you should entertain Florida.
I'm just saying, people, you could be my saviors, but then you know what I would do? I'd write about the offensive line every week. I'd write about every player on the offensive line because I'd have time. Instead of just writing about Orlando Brown taking Yannick and I can't pronounce his
Ngakoue.
Last name.
Ngakoue. You got it, yeah.
Ngakoue did not have a good day.
You got to say it with a flair. That's where the confidence comes from. You could be so wrong, but you said it with gusto.
Say anything with gusto and people are going to be so hesitant to criticize you. All you got to do is say it with gusto. That's basically my entire personality, is saying things with gusto and then hoping people are too afraid to correct me.
Yep.
Yeah, that's fair.
So it's on that note, go ahead, Seth.
It's done well for you. You've gotten some places.
Yeah, no, I mean, it definitely could have gone worse, you know? I'm more or less, you know, content with that that particular strategy, and I'm going to stick with it until somebody calls me up. We are recording still? I keep forgetting. let's talk about the actual game that Nate braved the heat of Vegas for, and that Seth will freeze to death reviewing, because things did look a little more normal. We left the unprecedented times, both in terms of all of the crowds that Nate was witnessing and with what we saw from the Chiefs, specifically the offense, but really all around. A 41-14 final would have been pretty low on my expected outcomes coming into this game. I was not confident that the Chiefs were going to perfectly snap back into place, even though, as we talked about before the game, like, there were signs, and Seth, you obviously wrote about all of that as we talked about it from the Packers game. There were signs that the offense was a whole lot closer than they were getting credit for. But Nate, this felt like an explosion return to form, and it's no guarantee that this is the real version of the Chiefs from this point forward, I suppose. But did you expect to see a 41-14 victory anywhere within your soul?
No, not 41. I thought that there would be a chance for them to get into the high 20s and return to maybe the 30s. And then Patrick Mahomes caught fire. But look, it was interesting to me that the Raiders, given what's going on with them and their roster, and Gus Bradley having success before against Patrick Mahomes, that he was just like, you know, finally, the Chiefs were like, an opponent just does what it does. Like, we don't have to think about cover two. You know, there is still a zone element to it. But, man, it feels good to out here see these single high safeties, to see this cover three look. And I will give credit where I really believe it needs to be placed. Clearly, Mahomes was the best player on the field. Anytime that man plays in the manner that he played, they will win. There's just, like, it was reminiscent of the New Orleans game last year in this moment where Derek Carr throws about as good of a pass as you could throw. And I knew in the moment that, like, that actually isn't Anthony Hitchens' fault. That's just a great throw. Like, it's just like every once in a while, guy just performs a little bit better than you. And so it's 17-14, and Mahomes is just like, yeah, I'm going to score. and there's nothing you can do about it. which was obviously similar to when he got sandwiched against the Saints and then on the next drive was a Hall of Fame quarterback, which is just like, no, that's okay. Like, I may be hurting. They may have sacked, you know, they may have sacked me. It led to a turnover, led to a touchdown, but like, it's okay. Like, you're not like, even though the crowd is going bananas, like, it's not, it doesn't matter. Like, we're driving the football down the field. But the two people that I thought of, in relation to Mahomes, because yes, the quarterback needs help. Yes. Even the best player in franchise history needs some encouragement from the third string backup in Shane Buechele. But fellas, Andrew Wiley kind of played the game of his life. Hmm. And Andy Reid schemed up things in a way that I just thought, oh, maybe my assumptions were correct about the Packers game. They got a lead. They could have scored more points. But nothing was really like super inventive or like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And wow, that guy's just wide open in terms of NFL windows for a quarterback. And when Travis Kelce caught, I think, either the second or first pass, and he did a little shake afterwards,
mm-hmm.
and I saw the formation and how he got wide open because Mahomes was in rhythm, the offensive line was on time, and the ball was delivered, it was just like, oh, like, the Raiders are going to see, as my father would say, somebody's real plays, like, and so that gives me encouragement. I don't know, and I know our listeners are probably wondering, well, Nate, who's calling the plays? Like,
yes.
There's been some discussion about Eric Bieniemy. Does he have more ownership? Are they trying to break tendencies by having Eric Bieniemy call plays? Is Andy Reid not as involved as he usually is? Who's, you know, on NBC's cameras, it looks like Andy Reid is calling the plays for Patrick Mahomes. More so than in previous weeks. Guys, I'm going to try, and you know what the end result's going to be.
Yep.
Yeah, here, hang on. Let me throw on my clairvoyant hat. I have a feeling that Andy Reid calls all the bad plays, and Eric Bieniemy calls all the good ones, and Andy will be so forthright and honest to just tell you flat out if you ask him.
I'm going to try. So I can't tell you, but all I can say is whether it's Mike Kafka, Eric Bieniemy, or Andy Reid, a guy that we all know is going in the Hall of Fame, those play calls were marvelous.
Yeah.
And it got Mahomes in rhythm, and then it built confidence in Mahomes, and then it led to Mahomes sort of understanding what the defense is doing and adding his perspective, his insight. And it just rolled. But for everyone that says, man, Patrick Mahomes is back, and that was clearly the biggest thing you could take away from this game, the play calling was so much better on offense than against the Giants. And I think I want to look back and think of that Packers game as just like a weird game where like the play calling was fine. It wasn't great, and then the next week, because Andy knows the importance of a divisional game, some dudes will be open. I'm going to get Byron Pringle open. He hadn't been open in a month. Don't you worry. Don't you worry. I'm gonna get him open. Like, it was just one of those games. And so Mahomes is the big headliner, but I think Andrew Wiley, standing tall and kind of knowing all of Max Crosby's moves, even though he's not anywhere close to being as physically similar or equal, I should say, to Max Crosby, but just at least knowing his moves and not being an absolute like third string right tackle, and then Andy Reid just kind of taking over. I'm going to give the credit to the head coach who's going in the Hall of Fame. I know Eric Bieniemy's good. I know he can call plays. My guess is Andy Reid had really he had kind of waited for this game, and thankfully for him, his players responded accordingly.
Seth, what'd you think?
I think that a lot of that is true. I've never believed it for a second when people, you know, Andy Reid giving up the play calling has just been one of the most popular storylines for years in Kansas City. Whether things are going really well or really poorly, it's always because Andy's not calling the plays anymore. I don't ever believe it, even for a second. I just don't. Other than maybe, you know, some spots here and there. But, I mean, this is what he does. There's a reason why, like, if he gets asked anything about the defense, he's like, I don't know, why don't you ask Steve? Like, because he sets the culture and all that. But the defense, he's like, yeah, I don't know. They got some guys over there. Steve's doing some stuff. And that's so he can focus on the offense. And that's just how it is. That's how it's always been. That's how it's always going to be. In terms of them, I mean, they completely blew the doors off the Raiders in terms of coaching. I will say also, though, when you've got, like, Daryl Williams mossing dudes in the end zone, mm-hmm. like, that's how you know, like, okay, this is our day.
By the way, he didn't just moss anybody, Seth. He mossed Jonathan Abrams, who's, like, the most Raider on defense. Mm-hmm. I mean, a guy that when I saw him play in person for the first time, I said, oh, yes, yes, I'll
yes.
keep him with this team. I don't know if he's good. But, man, he plays with the confidence of, like, I was...
The confidence of Usain Ngakoue.
Yes, I was chosen to play a Raider. And I'm going to play like a dirty Raider from the 1970s in the context of now. But, like, he kind of got the guy that, like, you know, feels like he's an important Raider, even though statistically...
Yeah, not so much.
In fairness, none of their other draft picks are still on the team, so...
The thing, I mean, there's so many cool things to take away from. That was really funny. That was quite a stray. Just out of,
It just is like Seth, you talk. I'll just make some fun Raiders observations in a minute.
Sure. There's so many fun things you could take away from this game. There's a lot of instant reactions. Mahomes is obviously the biggest thing. The defense playing really, really well against an offense that gave them a ton of problems last year is huge. Melvin Ingram. I mean, we could talk about each thing individually here, but the defense is one of the stories of the game for sure. I would say the fact that the trenches and I understand the modern NFL, it starts and ends with the quarterback, but that was one of the first games I've watched where I was just like, man, and maybe I'm looking for it more now, but it's just like the Chiefs offensive line is just better. Mm. They're just much better than the opponent. And you saw it, and they still run east-west more than I'd like, but whatever. But you saw it in the run game. You saw it in the pass game. They're just better. And it's not like, you know, the Packers had some injuries, but they've got a good front. The Raiders have a really good front. Remember, that was the big storyline going in. How can they hold up against this great pass rush? Well, I can tell you, Crosby, I saw he got credited by PFF for like 12 pressures. I guess I would love to see those plays and see how those were charted. You know what I mean? Because that maybe, I mean, because Wiley gave up some pressures, you know, and that's going to happen. But he played the game. He played a really good game in a really tough spot. And Ngakoue just got killed. Orlando Brown had a couple of bad snaps against him, but overall just swallowed him whole.
Is there any place on the internet that I could watch some of those clips and then maybe read about it?
Yes.
There might be, since you asked, in the last 10 seconds since you asked, I researched and wrote an entire article just to please you, Josh.
Wow, thank you.
about Orlando Brown against the Raiders. Brown is a guy that I wanted to write about for a while, and what I'm probably going to do during the bye week, I might try to chart every snap of the offensive line this year.
Oh.
Like every player, because, I mean, here's the deal. Everyone wants to know how Orlando Brown has been all year. Everyone wants to know how Creed Humphrey's been all year, how Trey Smith has been all year, how Joe Tooney's been all year. Although Tooney would probably be the last one I do because everyone's like, yeah, he's playing really well.
With one hand. With one hand, by the way.
Yeah, with one hand. He's like they definitely overpaid for a guard, but he was like the ultimate like fire and forget thing. It's almost like they were like, okay, we know we got to fix the line. What's something we can do where you just put this guy there and then just not think about guard for the next 3 years? And that's what he's done, and it's been cool. So that's my plan for the bye week is to hopefully chart at least those three guys every single snap. But with Brown, I wanted to do it sooner because I noticed during the game there were some people after he had a rough snap against Ngakoue that I charted as a pressure, Pro Football Reference didn't, where people were saying stuff about Brown. And he's taken a lot of crap this year. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how much of it's really deserved based on the games I watched. Like, he took a lot of crap after the Browns game. I watched every snap and I was like, nah, he was actually pretty good. And if you look at what Myles Garrett has done to people since that game, what absent Sunday, where the game plan was, well, I think we're just going to run the ball down their throat and Myles Garrett will never be a factor. But anyway, you see what Brown did against Garrett was actually very good in comparison to what happens to Garrett with most competition. So it was kind of a similar thing. Ngakoue is a quality defensive end, a quality pass rusher. He's got a variety of moves. He can win with quickness. And he had coming into the game, he had 6 sacks and like another 12 or 13 quarterback hits. That's impressive. He's been playing well. And so it was a good chance to chart every snap. And Brown just, he had a couple losses, so you couldn't call it a complete total like Trent Williams style domination, but it was a dominant performance overall. Especially when you take into account quality of competition. And I think that's something that's not talked about enough. And so I wrote about that on the Chief of the North newsletter, where you can subscribe. Seriously, Josh, you talk about this. The Venn diagram of people that subscribe to the Chief of North newsletter and that listen to this podcast, it's got to be like just like a circle.
I would think so. But you haven't moved to Florida yet. So clearly somebody needs to hear that message.
Yeah, somebody needs to hear that. So that's actually available on there where I charted every snap for wins, losses, and neutral plays. He was matched up against Ngakoue a ton. They kept Crosby on the other side. Frankly, I think intentionally, but that's where Crosby usually is anyways. Mm. But the thing about Brown when the Chiefs signed him, one of the things that I noticed when I reviewed his Ravens film was that I would put him and Fisher as kind of equivalent in terms of ability, just very different styles of players. The biggest difference I saw between the two of them, not in terms of style, but in terms of ability, was against higher level competition, Brown generally played better. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've seen with Myles Garrett and then with Ngakoue, where his ability to turn defensive linemen one-dimensional seems to be pretty universal. And it was a lot of fun. My favorite picture of this entire game is one that I took after just a super dominant rep. It's actually the first. This is one, even if you're not subscribed, you can actually see it, where Ngakoue tries to reach the edge. He can't because Orlando Brown uses his 9-foot arms to kind of push him aside. So then he tries to cut inside, and Brown's just like, oh, well, since you're moving that way anyway, and just throws him to the ground. And then just he just stands over him, letting him know about it. And so I took a picture of that moment where he is just, you see Ngakoue kind of trying to get up, and Brown's sitting there like, you know, he's saying some version of stay down, please. That may be the edited version. But it was a lot of fun to watch, and I think that's an underrated aspect of this game is they took a Raiders defense that has a good pass rush, and with Mahomes moving really well in the pocket, they largely neutralized them.
Yeah. By the way, this is from Next Gen Stats, and this was at the conclusion of Sunday night's game, but apparently to Next Gen Stats, Ngakoue and Crosby are the best dual edge rushers at generating pressures on opposing quarterbacks this season. They lead the league in that. And so it is impressive that Mahomes wasn't scrambling a ton because he didn't have to because the protection was so good and he wasn't sacked either. So that's the quarterback and the offensive line working together in harmony in a way that I don't think we've really seen to that degree this season. And so when they had to be at their best, you know, based on what the statistics have shown so far, that's a good sign moving forward that this offensive line and the quarterback are both getting more in sync as the season moves along.
So in 2020, obviously the Raiders started with Henry Ruggs and Damon Arnett at picks 12 and 19. Neither of them are on the team anymore. Lynn Bowden Jr., they drafted 80th overall and then traded him for a 6th round pick before the season started. He's been decent, I think, with Miami since then. I think he's still in Miami. Then they took Bryan Edwards, the next pick. You probably heard his name against the Chiefs on Sunday night, but he has not been incredibly impactful with the Raiders. And then Tanner Muse, John Simpson, Amik Robertson are your remaining picks of the 2020 draft, which looking at it now, like at least Breeland Speaks wasn't a top 20 pick, you know, in terms of like disastrous drafts. This is Mike Mayock has done some things with the Raiders. Cleveland Farrell is a role player, and they drafted him fourth overall in 2019. Last year, their first pick was Alex Leatherwood. They traded up for him and then promptly ended up moving him to guard because he's a guard. They like their Alabama guys, though, even though they've not. I mean, Josh Jacobs is a good football player. Although, did you guys know that Derek Carr led the Raiders in rushing?
Yes, I did.
18 yards on the ground for Derek Carr led the team. Kenyon Drake, 4 for 16. Josh Jacobs, 7 for 16. I didn't even notice that until today. I totally glossed over that during the actual game.
Derek Nnadi would like his respect.
Yes. He ended the game with a jet skiing sack. You kidding me? That's how you knew it was absolutely party time. I have one thing that you guys haven't totally covered yet that you both have at least sort of like alluded to that I'm just curious as to what you think what you think you can take away from this particular cross section. And Nate, you mentioned earlier, you know, that the Chiefs were very glad to not just see nothing but two deep safeties and not just to see the same looks that they've been seeing for the majority of this season. Mm-hmm. So how much do you credit the Chiefs' offense in this game, and how much do you say, well, this is also partially on the Raiders' defense? And whatever that mix is, it seems very unlikely to me that any team would look back at this game on Sunday night and say, yeah, we're actually going to try what the Raiders did also. We're going to keep showing some varied looks instead of just heavily leaning on the two deep safety shells and everything, because it seems pretty clear that that would be the thing to keep trying against the Chiefs, right?
Yes. This might be a game where you look at it on film and say, well, for instance, if you're the Cowboys, you know, are they the best cover two team in the league? But, like, should they try it? More times than not, probably. I thought it was interesting that the Raiders adjusted in the red zone to go to two high safeties versus being in the middle of the field. And that still didn't kind of work out. But what I think Andy Reid and the coaching staff will sort of tell the players on offense is that this is repeatable for a couple reasons. Unlike the Green Bay game, I think the Chiefs only had one significant drop, and that was Travis Kelce in the middle of the field, even though the game was already sort of in hand at that point. By the way, did anybody notice that Andy Reid kind of rolled out some screens? Some effective screen passing.
The second week in a row, they also incorporated the running backs into the receiving game a lot more. And when you
Darryl Williams, who's basically a receiver.
And when you don't have elite linebacker play, it's really hard to compensate for trying to cover the intermediate and deep routes. And that's, you could see a huge difference in how the Raiders closed versus how the Packers did on some of those quick routes.
Yep. And play action was involved. Nobody dropped the ball considerably. There was no turnovers, and they cut down the penalties significantly from the last two games. So it'll be fascinating to see if Andrew Wiley continues to be the right tackle for at least one more week against the Cowboys. It'll be interesting to see how the Chiefs handle Lucas Niang, who's still dealing with a rib injury. Like, is he capable of returning before the bye week, or is it more, is it just wiser to give him another week off? Obviously, Mike Remmers is on short-term IR, so you won't see him until later in the month in terms of his availability. So that'll be one thing to keep an eye on. But hey, did you know that they chipped blocked a couple more times?
Yes, I did notice that.
All of these things are repeatable. And by the way, your quarterback had better footwork, was trusting of what his eyes were seeing. As he told me, guys were getting open. Makes a big difference. And look, the Cowboys can be thrown on. I know that they have an interesting defense where it's variance on, like, man, when they get a play, it is a massively impactful play. But you can matriculate the ball down the field on them. So I think all these things are repeatable. It'll be interesting to see if the Cowboys do play that too high shell. But there's no way to sort of, it's hard to quantify, but guys, Travis Kelce was not dancing in the previous 3 weeks.
Yep.
He looks healthier. Tyreek Hill ran crisp deep routes, not deep routes where it's like, I don't know. I'm not going to, you know, there was the one against Green Bay where I think, as Seth alluded to, it looked like he didn't have the full burst, which makes you think, is he fully healthy? There was other times too where against the Giants on the one deep shot, Mahomes didn't kind of throw him open and he had to like kind of slow down and adjust to the ball. And he actually didn't catch a 50-50 jump ball, which again is odd for what Tyreek is normally accustomed to. But against the Raiders, because of the play calling, he had more space to roam and his routes were crisper and he looks a little bit healthier. So all of these things are, I believe, are transferable. And that gives me confidence that, you know, will the Chiefs score 41 again? That's asking a lot, but they can be a team that can go shot for shot or punch for punch with the Cowboys in a game that's probably going to be played in the 30s.
Seth, how sustainable do you think all that is?
Very. Basically, the biggest thing, and we talked about this a lot last week, you let me do like a whole soliloquy on quarterback play versus statistics.
And you always say that word so funny.
What word? Statistics?
Nope.
Quarterback?
Nope.
Play?
Talking for a long time in a poetic way. That word. The word. What's the word again?
Say it with gusto.
You go to hell, Briscoe.
It's just, no, but you know, I, let's just, you.
No, soliloquy. Soliloquy.
I think it's getting worse.
Sailor?
You're putting a A at the end.
Soliloquy. Oh, my goodness.
Hold on. Let me see if I can make this. I need you guys to be really quiet so I can play my headphones into my microphone. If you make any loud noises, it's going to pick up here.
Okay.
So everyone be real quiet.
Soliloquy.
Soliloquy.
That's what Google says.
Now, hey, Google sounds right to me. So now that we've established that I'm an idiot, last week I went on a soliloquy. I have been mispronouncing that word for years.
There is just some words like that that just, you just never know. And then it is weird. So,
well, and you know, you read a word and you just kind of decide how to pronounce it early on. And there you go. I used to think it was conspicuous, not conspicuous.
Conspicuous sounds like a word, though, in fairness.
It doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, anyway, so last week I talked for a long time about, I demagogued, am I pronouncing that one correctly? On, you know, how Mahomes played against the Packers and that he overall played pretty well and that the line, like, pretty well, like, not close to very well for a normal dude, but pretty well for him. And that the line played well and that they just had a series of plays that just, through either poor luck, and that was probably more than half, and then really nice plays by either a linebacker or a safety on the Packers, especially their linebackers, you know, guys got tackled a little short or, you know, whatever, right? And then that stopped happening against the Raiders. And I would say people are going to talk about, you know, cover three versus cover two, all that stuff. It's not like shells don't exist in cover three. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And zones don't exist in cover three. And I really do think if you look at Patrick Mahomes' stats versus cover two zones the last couple of years, I really think that issue has become more and more of a narrative talking point. Now they're struggling against two deep shells this year, but it's not just zone, it's man too. And I think it has more to do with self-inflicted errors like fumbles, etc. Because everyone's like, oh, look at this EPA per play against, you know, cover two shells. Okay, but what if like three of those include drop passes that turn into picks that might have otherwise been touchdowns? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so really by and large, and this is what people forgot because they just sucked against the Titans and then played really badly against the Giants as well in offense. And all it took was two games for that to become a narrative. Before that, people kept ignoring that they were near the top of the league in scoring despite leading the league in turnovers by a wide margin, which is borderline impossible to do. But they were doing it. And so, like, this offense being awesome shouldn't be a surprise because most of the season it has, outside of when they decide to just hand the ball over to the other team. And so they stopped doing that. They solved the execution issues that they had against Green Bay, and suddenly the offense looked great against a defense that had been playing pretty well. So people are going to make a big deal about the cover two, cover three thing, but all the stuff we saw, I think it's very sustainable because they've sustained it in the past. They just kept fumbling the stinking ball. Or, you know, it bouncing off their hands into someone else's hands. And you saw the turnover luck shift a little bit.
Yep.
Mahomes had two that could have gone and weren't. And you see that start to bounce out.
Tyreek Hill dribbled a ball into the into the sideline.
He did. And so it could have, I mean, things could have even gone differently for the Chiefs in terms of even better luck in some ways. And so it looks very sustainable to me. They got really good contributions from some of the other guys on offense. And maybe that's just what they're deciding to do is like, look, we can't count on individual guys to win one-on-one outside of Hill and Kelce. But we can at least try to scheme things to where, like, hey, let's scheme it to where Mecole Hardman is sprinting across the field because no one can keep up with him.
Yeah.
That's sensible.
Yep.
Like, there are things that they're doing. Getting Kelce free releases from the backfield and some other areas on the field. I mean, these are all things that look sustainable. And I think, and Dare Williams has definitely earned, I mean, he's a much better receiver than he is a runner. Not that he's a terrible runner, but that's just not his thing. He's got really good hands. He gets up the field quickly, plays the ball well, catches it smoothly, all those things you want from a running back. So he's earned a role there. But given the way that they're playing on offense, the type of stuff that they're calling, this is like the stuff that like we thought they would be doing when they drafted Clyde, like featuring their running backs. And turns out it works really well. And so I think you see even in a higher ceiling there with someone with a little more burst, with someone with a little more wiggle.
Elusiveness to them, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So I think it's really sustainable, but we've been hurt before. So I keep saying, well, let's wait it out another week. I'm curious what the offense looks like against Dallas, who is a very, very good team.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
One statistic from Shil Kapadia, our colleague at The Athletic, that I want everybody to keep in mind. The Chiefs have gone three and out just 20.4% of the time.
That's so small.
Which is the lowest percentage in the NFL. And they are second in the league in EPA per drive. So
that's so hard to do.
Essentially, they're getting a first down. So they're, by and large, at least changing the field territory sort of battle. They're getting points. And essentially, if you're not playing your best ball on defense, you're hoping for a turnover or a drop pass. Or for a first-year running back in Derek Gore to not hit the hole on fourth and one.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. And that's not really one can't call that a sustainable game plan. And so I think the question for me is more whether or not what has, I guess you'd call it, worked for opposing teams, if that's a sustainable game plan. Because the only team that really, I mean, the Bills and the Titans did some stuff, but that was still a lot of self-inflicted stuff. Mm-hmm. And Travis Kelce clearly being hurt. And so I'm kind of excited to see how it goes. I don't know.
Well, let's talk about the sustainability on the other side then, because 14 points to the Raiders also is better than I would have expected, certainly better than I would have or did predict. They just didn't run the ball very much, and when they did, it didn't do much of anything. I mentioned Bryan Edwards earlier. I think this is almost certainly the most productive game of his NFL career. Hunter Renfro had a bunch of catches, but they didn't go for very much of anything. DeSean Jackson had what was going to be their most explosive offensive play of the day, and then Rashad Fenton went and punched the ball out as Jackson sort of turned around. Though I did try to warn you guys that he was going to be open 40 yards downfield at some point. I never promised what would happen after he had the ball in his hands. Like, DeSean Jackson probably leads the league in career fumbles within the five while on the run of a 40-some yard touchdown for various reasons. Mm-hmm. Darren Waller, not really a factor in this game. The pass rush looked good. I mean, you guys could pick any spot you want, but I mean, we got the Dan Sorensen pick that had basically just been loading for 9 weeks. You guys can pick a spot that you think is worthy of looking at a little bit more closely, but that's a strong defensive performance from a unit that I think needed to kind of prove that it wasn't just that they could look good against Daniel Jones and Jordan Love. And now they've done it against an offense that's been pretty good for stretches this year. Obviously, they don't have Henry Ruggs, but they've still been a very productive unit, certainly more so than the Giants or Rodgers-less Packers. Maybe more than the Rodgers full Packers.
Who knew the effects of COVID might disrupt your flow and rhythm?
I think if I say anything here, I'm going to get in trouble. So,
well, I'm happy to announce that, you know, it could have a cumulative effect based on the research of scientists. Anyway, research
you've done your research.
No, not my research. No.
How do you know that doctors actually know what they're talking about? That's just my question.
Expertise is a thing we should all appreciate.
How long do doctors have to go to school for? It's a long time, right?
It's almost a decade in some cases.
I did 7 Googles. I'm pretty sure I'm good.
And you know, someone like Laurent Duvernay-Tardif's only done it half the time because, you know.
It takes a while.
It does.
There's a lot to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. I'm going to do my 8th Google.
The human body is a...
Hold on. I'm sorry. Sometimes you search something on Google and there'll be like a special like result, like where it'll skew it by 20% or whatever. Mm. You click the little, it says you've done 8 Googles of learn. I just searched learn about medicine and it just gave me a doctorate. It says I'm a doctor of Google. That doesn't seem legally binding.
I'm going to ask you to put the white coat down. And to just stay in your expertise.
Those were my scissors at midfield of Chiefs Raiders, by the way. Those were my medical tape cutting scissors, and I apologize for that.
So, in relation to the Chiefs,
Seth,
defense,
you've been really quiet.
I was just letting you guys drive the bus.
Are you there, Seth? Zoom still working? Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Nate.
In terms of the Chiefs defense. It appears that Steve Spagnuolo has some expertise in this field when given the competent tools necessary. I think it's clear to me that this was the Chiefs defense that one could have assumed was going to show itself in, I don't know, late September. But weirdly, sometimes it takes 8 weeks, 9. Hell, maybe 10. And that's just where we are, where I'm going to say this very quietly, because some of y'all have understood that we study this team appropriately with our expertise, and sometimes we're out in front of what other coaches realize. Or, you know, we know your team gives you so much joy and so much emotional uplift on your weekends. I get it. It's only going to get colder. I don't necessarily want to give away all the reasons, all the ways to beat the Chiefs, because it's hard enough. It's hard enough to live this life with your football team kind of teetering or, you know, not performing to expectation. But I just want to let you know, Steve Spagnuolo has started to take away the top option for opposing offenses. And maybe the other teams don't know that yet, because it's just now starting to reveal itself on film, because he has competent football players not named Daniel Sorensen on the field for the majority of the game. So that's a trend, ladies and gentlemen, that coaches in the analytic departments
and hell, even the scouts are gonna have to adjust to at a quicker pace, you know. All I'm saying is this will be in the Athletic at some point later this week. But guys, the last skill position player on the opposing team to have over 100 yards, I believe, was A.J. Brown.
Wow.
And that was the last time the Chiefs lost.
This show's been really weird today, but I think that it's good that we're whispering, because while there's absolutely no chance in blue hell that that Mike McCarthy would listen to this podcast, I feel like Kellen Moore might, you know? I feel like Kellen Moore would like this show.
I feel like it seems like Jerry Jones does very little other than consume Cowboys-related content. And so there's a possibility. I mean, and look, Jerry Jones, if we're all being really honest with ourselves, I mean really honest, I want you to put aside all the pretensions about who you think you are.
Mm-hmm.
If you had enough money to buy that super yacht, you'd do it too.
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, with you putting that in my head, Seth, I thought you were going to say
the bus was used for other means.
Well, I mean, I thought you guys were just going to talk about how smart and handsome and wonderful Jerry Jones is, and if he is listening to this podcast, and perhaps that he wanted to, I don't know, thank us for our great podcasting work because he is so smart, handsome, and did I mention handsome?
You did several times.
Okay, well, I want him to know that we know that, and that maybe, you know, if he wants to send us a yacht each, look, I don't think that any of us could really use it from here.
Maybe a helicopter?
I don't know.
I'm not asking anybody to say that. I'm not asking anybody to send this to the Cowboys
because that would be foolish of you.
But if you want to give a quick shout out on the twitter.com verse, if you want to shout out Jory Epstein, who's a wonderful reporter of the Cowboys, that would be great. She's awesome at her job. And if she wants to relay this information to the team, then I can't do anything to stop that. But did I enjoy Hard Knocks? Because I got to see my friend ask Jerry Jones a question, and then Jerry Jones kind of, you know, have an emotional, like, all I'm asking you is to love your significant other the way Jerry Jones loves that star. All I'm saying is that all of a sudden the Chiefs defense can take away or at least limit the opposing team's best player on offense. Did you see who was out here covering Darren Waller? It won 49.
Is this
show happening because we're recording on a Tuesday? What happened?
Jory, don't tell them who 49 is, or don't tell them what has been going on in the last month. Tell the Cowboys to actually run the ball, because statistically, if you look at it, by and large, Jory, the Chiefs have a bad run defense. Ladies and gentlemen, you and I know that has not been true for the last 4 weeks.
You gotta keep Patrick Mahomes off the field, Jerry. That's what I hear.
So, I mean, this is obviously, I mean, this might be the best offense they face for the rest of the season, right?
Yeah.
Barring if they make the playoffs. Dallas's offense is really good with Dak in there. And so this is going to be the test, because one thing Dallas is they're versatile, right? I mean, obviously they love some of their receivers, but there's no like one thing to take away. Whereas like with Waller kind of taken away by and large, the Raiders just didn't know what to do. They did a good job taking away Davante Adams as well.
Yes.
And so these are things that are important to note. And now it's just a matter of, they're going to have to continue to get pressure. They're going to have to, because Dak is really good. So I'm excited to see what they can do in terms of as a defense. A lot's going to depend on the offense too, though. And I think we're seeing that more and more. This defense, and a lot of defenses are this way, but I think especially the Chiefs with the way that they're built, when the offense is humming and forcing the other team to play their style of football, the Chiefs defense looks so much better. Like when Chris Jones doesn't have to care even a little bit about whether or not they might hand off the ball, he is unblockable. and he's been good against the run this year too, but they're a completely different unit when they're put in that situation. And I would just note, you know, talking about all the stuff on the defense, Melvin Ingram, you know, we were hopeful that it would be more of an addition than just Melvin Ingram, right? It would remove a weak spot on the defense, add another position of strength, even if it's not like, you know, he's not a star, but if you can add an above average player at a spot, you'd kind of see this domino effect. And I think we've seen it a little bit these last couple weeks. He also adds a measure of physicality. Like, the Chiefs defense is way more physical this year since Gay got on the field and Bolton got on the field. And then you add Ingram to the mix of that. Those are very, very physical players. And I think you see a little bit of a difference in that. Obviously, Nadi's always been physical. You know, Jerry Reed is a physical guy. All the, you know, the big guys always are. But they're adding some real physicality to their front seven that I think is a noticeable difference from previous years. And so the Cowboys are the test, right? If they even like have an average day against the Cowboys, I'll be thrilled. You know, if the Cowboys score 27 points or so, I'll be very happy about that. Because I feel like this defense in previous years would have, and obviously early this year, would have gotten just destroyed by Dak Prescott. And I'm still a little concerned that might happen. But overall, I'm really happy with what they did against an offense that had shredded them in years past.
I think you're 100% right about the Cowboys as the test, but like, this is a little bit of carryover from the last 2 weeks for me. Like, these last three games, at least, just whoever's been across from him, they've been the better unit. They have taken away the number one option for whoever is the number one option on that team. So, I don't know. I feel like it's at least some earned optimism at the very least. We're about at our hour mark here, and I do at least want to mention that Tommy Townsend did in fact just look like a Greek god throwing a perfectly executed fake punt. We mentioned no offensive turnovers. Mike Hughes had the fumble on the kick return with him and Hardman both being back there, which was interesting and then very good until he ultimately got stripped by the punter. A good game for punters, I guess, again. Anything else, though, from the game that you would say, hey, here's one thing we haven't touched on yet that I think is interesting or important before we wrap it up?
I told you guys in the offseason, and it sort of confirmed, it was confirmed in training camp, even though he wasn't getting that many reps, but you don't ever have to worry about Rashad Fenton. You just don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That guy is quietly playing out of his mind. And for a 6th-round draft pick, where I literally looked at some of the Chiefs scouts and was like, word. Like, are you serious right now? what a find. I mean, just what a find. And a guy that they clearly knew was super coachable and just has a want to that is really admirable in terms of not being like, physically, like, he's not a physical freak, but he is a elite athlete, and I hope people understand the difference between the two.
Yep.
But he has a want to, he has proper techniques, he has a willingness to be daring in a way that, like, you kind of have to be at the cornerback position in this league, which I don't know if that gets discussed enough, where it's like, you got to take chances at as an NFL cornerback. Like, the game is slanted and not in your advantage. Like, they literally run slants at you, dog. like it's not great, but he's playing at a really high level. So if you look at all three levels of the defense, Melvin Ingram has made a huge impact, obviously coming in at the right time with both Jones and Frank Clark getting healthier. It appears that Willie Gay is a good player. full stop, good player. And in the back end, as Chevarius Ward has just been your NFL starter that you can depend upon, as Legarius Need becomes a player that I thought in training camp had a chance to be an all-pro. Like, I wrote that. I was like, guys, have you seen Legarius Need? This dude's an all-pro in front of our eyes. It took a while, but hey, he's playing really, really well, especially these last 3 weeks. But the guy who's actually made it work beyond the, you know, appropriate change at the free safety position has been fitting. You have five DBs now, and you kind of need five DBs in the NFL that you can trust, because teams are going to spread you out, and the Chiefs should encourage, hey, get up by a score or two, dictate the tempo, and if your pass rush matches your secondary, then good things can happen. But Rashad Fenton deserved a few minutes of a shout out.
Seth, you got one? I've got one for my last little mention.
I guess I'll give and this is a temporary, we'll see, because it wasn't too long ago, we weren't quite sure, a maybe shout out to Brett Veach when we talk about draft picks. You know, if you look at the last three drafts, with Fenton playing out of his mind, with Thornhill playing really, really good football, with Hardman at least having a role, Colin Saunders at least having a role, Lucas Niang showing he can play, L'Jarius Sneed being what he is, Michael Dana being a useful player, Willie Gay Jr. being really useful, Clyde Edwards-Helaire being a guy who can at least play, who was overdrafted, but he can play. And then this year, you got Bolton, Humphrey, Smith, and maybe Gray starting to show a little usefulness. I may owe Brett Veach an apology about drafting here coming soon, because that is a lot of useful dudes in drafts, and that's hard to do.
For my last thing here, I'll give it's sort of a two running back mention here for me, folks, I'm ending this show for myself talking about two very good running back performances. You heard me. Matt McMullen tweeted out that Darrell Williams became the first tailback in Chiefs history to have 9 or more receptions and over 100 receiving yards and a receiving touchdown in a single game. Now, whenever you get that many qualifiers in, it usually means that something else is being, you know, narrowly cropped out of the photo. And I get that. It's a great stat line for Darrell with an incredible play that running backs do not make very often. But I saw that stat and went, wait a second, where's Jamaal Charles being narrowly cropped out of frame? He only actually had 2 games in his career with over 100 receiving yards, which I was surprised by.
Yeah. Wow.
But it happened once in 2008 on 3 targets and 3 receptions. He went for 3 for 102 in that game. And then it happened again in 2013. You guys may remember there was a game where he caught 8 passes for 195 yards and 4 touchdowns. Yeah, Seth, it seems to fire up some faint memory for you. Who's to say if that game was memorable for a lot of people? I believe it was 5 touchdowns total, 4 receiving. But Darrell Williams literally has a stat line for a pass-catching running back that stands up to a couple Jamaal Charles games there. So, and also just a great play as he went over one of the Raiders' 7 remaining draft picks from the last 5 years. That was a joke. It might be more than that, although it might be less than that. I'm actually not sure. So there's that. You can read Seth's piece about Orlando Brown Jr. and the charting there up at the Chief of the North newsletter right now. I mean, I know you'll do your Mahomes breakdown, Seth. I don't know if you've got something else immediately in the works right now.
I kind of want to look at some of what Darrell Williams did. I don't know if I'm going to have time, and that's been covered really well. I'm going to look at Mahomes, obviously. I'd like to look at how the defense on the back end and then on the front end really stymied an offense that had messed with them. So I kind of want to look at some of their pass rushes there in terms of their blitzes and how it associated with their coverage, if I have time.
So that'll be at mnchiefsfan.substack.com right now up on The Athletic. You can read Nate's post-game piece from Vegas, and also we'll certainly have, he's already teased some of the stuff that's going to be coming. He's going to give the Cowboys a game plan later this week coming up on The Athletic as well. And I think the plan right now is for us to do a show. We can talk about this. The listeners don't need the time stamps, but presumably we'll do one on Thursday. And then another one on Monday to follow up the Cowboys game. And then we're probably going to take a couple of shows off because it's Thanksgiving and the bye week and all of that. And then maybe for the first time in the last several years, none of us will have to take a vacation with a microphone in our suitcase, which is, you know, fitting, I would say. But we'll probably take a little break as the bye week hits at a good time for Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, and all of us.
Yep. And to end this, I'm actually going to promote one of our guys. Russ and Dot, if you haven't seen it yet, please go to theathletic.com because, you know, as I was writing my story Sunday night in Vegas, it became very clear that we needed to find this man. And his name is Juwan Nelson, the I got my swagger back. If you want to hear how that became a thing and why it's a thing essentially 7 years later, go check out Russ's story. Talking to Nelson and just giving his perspective on, hey man, Travis Kelce imitated you in front of the entire nation. And so it's a very fun piece, and you should check it out.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.